If you'd all rise, please.
Mr. Crawford, can you lead us in the pledge?
Please, if you'd face the flag, hand over heart, follow the plate, please. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
There was no action taken in closed session. Our student representative to the board, Petra Nabi.
So I have a school report from Marysville Charter. The sophomore class is selling stickers for $1 every Thursday of the month of March to fundraise for their class. The sophomore class will also be throwing Sadie Hawkins on March 15th from 7 to 10 p.m. in the MHS cafeteria. MCAA participated in music in our schools on Thursday, March 7th at 6 at McKinney. MCAA's annual blood drive is Friday, March 29th. And that's all I have.
Thank you very much. Next, we have our presentation for Browns Valley Cordova Elementary School. Mrs. Strickland.
Good evening. Thank you, Dr. Starkey, Mr. Carrion, Mr. Hodson, and the board for allowing me to present on behalf of Browns Valley and Cordova. I brought a little note so I'd remember to introduce myself and tell you a little bit about myself. My name is Heather Strickland. I have been in the district. This is my fourth year. The last 3 years I spent at Yuba Gardens as an assistant principal, and this year I am lucky to be at Browns Valley and Cordova. When I was at Yuba City Unified, I was an instructional coach, a vice principal, and a teacher, eighth grade history. So this is Browns Valley. My presentation, I'll talk a little bit about Browns Valley, a little bit about Cordova, and then I've got some stuff that pertains to both schools. It's interesting for me this year, being my first year at Browns Valley and Cordova, I have been blessed to give a bunch of welcome speeches, right, at both schools. Welcome to back to school night. Welcome to our spaghetti dinner. And each time that I've stood up there, I almost have to say it's interesting to be welcoming when I'm the one that feels welcomed there. So it's similar to do this because some of the things I'll speak on, you know, happened last year. And so it's just kind of interesting. So bear with me. So this is the staff at Browns Valley, and it is not just me that's new this year. I separated everything into two colors, so all of the yellow names have been there, and the names in kind of that lightish gray are new. So I did the math this morning, and I think that is about 7 out of 19 staff members, which is roughly one-third of the school that is new. So that's really different, I think, for Browns Valley. It's similar for Cordova, too. So both schools have me, that is new, and then also a new secretary at each site. So that's been interesting this year. So I put this slide in before I went into some of our last year's CASP data, just because it kind of shows the continuum. So this is not my school's, it's just kind of an example, and it just shows from lowest performance to highest. And I've heard Amy and Lenny talk about looking at them like gauges in your car. So obviously where you aspire to be is that blue one. So this is last year's CASP data for Browns Valley. The first one that you're looking at says English Language Arts. So it shows that Browns Valley is in that green gauge close to the blue. 11.2 points above standard, and similar for math. in that green gauge and 17 points above standard. There is some room for growth because they both did decline a little bit last year from the year previous. The slide near those two is English learner progress, and it's not a significant subgroup for Browns Valley, so we don't have any data for that. The next two are suspension rates and chronic absenteeism. Those are a little different because you actually want to see a decrease for those. You want to see less students being chronically absent and less students being suspended. Browns Valley for both of those shows in the orange gauge, and they both increased marginally, but what you're looking there for is a decrease. So there's room for improvement there too, and I have some slides at the end to show you what we're doing for that. Some of the fun things that happened at Browns Valley this year were some facilities improvements. The first slide shows that we got a new floor, and that is in the office and the cafeteria. We also painted the ceiling and had new bark filled in the play area. That was a fun day because what the kids said after that happened was, we're taller. Like, we all feel taller. They would, like, go on all the different play structures, and so that was kind of fun for them. This one I'm really excited about. If you've ever been to Browns Valley, well, I'm sure at a lot of schools, but both Browns Valley and Cordova, space is a very precious resource. It's limited. And so one thing that we were dealing with is that we had students working in the hallway, right? Like, we had a TK table, and it was in the hallway, and oftentimes people would come to do speech, and they were in the library or in the hallway. And so we had this little tiny copy room at the end of a hallway, and we pulled everything out of that over spring or winter break and turned that into a resource room. So it gives a private area for speech, for IEP meetings, and it gives an area in the library for TK to work. And so then we made our copy room in the hallway. That's that slide to the right that you're looking at. So it's been kind of nice. I think something that doesn't really show up in pictures, so I didn't include it, we also worked with Jolie's office to find someone to tint the windows so that they've got kind of that reflective tinting on the inside, because what we were thinking is almost the whole side of that room is windows, and it's hard in any sort of a lockdown situation to really run around and pull everything down, but that didn't really show up in pictures. Another thing that is new this year is we're working on reaching our students who need a Tier 2 intervention. So those few kids who, after their first best instruction, are still kind of struggling with a standard. So our resource teacher works with students on Tuesdays from 9 to 10 with an ELA and a math focus. Teachers use collaboration time to identify students who need that extra intervention time. So far, it's been working. We've been doing it for about 2 months, and we've had a third of the kids that were originally identified for ELA intervention move out and not need that anymore. This I put in because moving from Yuba Gardens to Cordova and Browns Valley, I knew there would be a learning curve and there would be some differences. But within the first couple of months, Sally the cow really tested me. At one point, I was calling and thinking, like, do I need a catapult for this? This cow just kept wandering through this fence onto the school grounds. And the first time it was funny, but she just kept coming. And so I thought, man, I don't think I learned anything in school about what to do when the cow comes on campus. And we did ultimately get the fence fixed, and Sally did not visit us anymore, but it was quite a few times. So that's her. The community surrounding Browns Valley and Cordova is super involved, and it is so fun to be a part of. This is not even a quarter of the different events that the community and the PTO and the staff put on for kids there, but it's just a couple of them. We had a harvest festival. a sweetheart dance, which is like a family dance. So all the families come, and it's just the cutest thing. One of the parents put on a book drive where books were collected and donated to the students who were affected by the campfire. That was pretty remarkable to see. This year at Browns Valley, a teacher and I started a chapter of Girls on the Run. So third through fifth graders and I are running around that field. Thank goodness Sally is gone. And this Friday we'll have our Shamrock Shuffle. So Cordova, also a really, really neat small community school. I have had such a good time getting to know everyone there. And similarly, I think actually it was identically 7 out of 19. I don't know if I have that exactly right, but roughly one-third of Cordova, the ones in the light grayish white, also new this year. We have a new secretary and new myself, which I'm sure you know is a big chunk of running any school. So the learning curve has been steep, but we're having fun with that. So the CASP data for Cordova, it shows on the my left, English Language Arts, we are in the orange on that red to blue continuum, but the good news is that it maintained. There was no decline for their test scores from year before last to last year. And in math, there was a 5.5% increase or point increase, so that's exciting. There are enough English learners at Cordova for them to be a significant subgroup, but because this is only the first year of our EL testing data, we don't have results yet. Those will come next year. So it just kind of gives on the right-hand side a breakdown of where our students land as far as their EL levels. And in regards to chronic absenteeism, Cordova is sitting in the yellow. And they did have a decline of almost 1%, so that is good. We want to see the absenteeism and the suspension decline and the academic stuff go up. So for Cordova, for the suspension rate, they are in the orange. It increased about 0.5%. We had some facilities improvements at Cordova, too. It doesn't translate in this picture, but we got that multi-purpose room painted, and it looks so good. That was really, really exciting. And we also got bark for our playground structures there. And again, the kids were taller. We're working on a Tier 2 intervention program for the students at Cordova 2. It is slightly easier with just like one extra staff member helps so much. We have a STARS program there, and so we're able to utilize our STARS lead, which really helps. Because of that, we're able to have an intervention run every day. And so the way it works there is, not every day, I'm sorry, on Wednesdays. When we have minimum days, we don't do one. But after lunch, students not needing intervention go with our STARS provider and a paraeducator, and they go for some enrichment. So far, it's been STEM activities or technology. They made PowerPoints. And the students needing intervention stay with their classroom teacher, and then they're able to get that one-on-one small group intervention time. We keep track of that in a Google Doc. This is an example of January's. I put little stars over the kids' names, but that's what it looks like. So that's how we track constantly where all the kids are and whether they're in enrichment or intervention. We have to get creative with our resources at the small school. So some events that happened at Cordova, and again, such a supportive community surrounding Cordova School. This isn't even a quarter of them that happened there. We had a spaghetti dinner. That was exciting. They also have a family dance, and it was a lot of fun. A Veterans Day assembly that our new music teacher, Mr. Gray, helped them put on. It was really touching. Movie nights happen often there, and the fifth graders and I are working on a yearbook, which is fun. It gives me a chance to connect with them. So those are some of the exciting things happening at Cordova. Our attendance at Browns Valley and Cordova went up slightly less than 0.5% from this year, from last year to this year. So that's exciting too. Something new that we're doing at both schools this year is obviously trying to work on keeping suspensions down, which is not a huge issue there, but something that, you know, we are, that is looked at by the state. So Cordova and Browns Valley both subscribe to a program called Suite 360. And what it is a whole intervention online web-based system. And it's got probably about 100 different intervention lessons. And they touch on anything from being tardy to class to playing rough, keeping hands to yourself, just all kinds of things that would plague elementary students. And so if a student has one of those issues, instead of looking at a suspension or missing time out of class, they'll come in at lunch and work on a lesson with myself or our secretary. So this is the report we get. We had a student have an issue dealing with another student in class appropriately. So he completed a module called Calming My Strong Feelings. And he has to, you know, work through this module and answer some questions at the end. And you can see that his response to how he would change things in the future is ask his teacher for help and take deep breaths. So instead of just being punitive, there's learning involved too, and hopefully a change in behavior. So I included the graphs that I know I'm more used to looking at in regards to that statewide assessment data, the 5x5 chart, and it just shows Browns Valley and Cordova in relation to other schools, and I realize it's kind of small to see, but Browns Valley is up at the top there with that green arrow, and it shows in the declined category that it did decline a few points, but that it is sitting up there in green. And it shows, and this one's for ELA, Cordova, that they are making progress and moving slowly but surely up and gaining points. In math, Cordova is over there in the yellow for showing an increase. And these are just the same results that I shared earlier, just a different way of viewing them. And this one is for attendance. Browns Valley and Cordova both have that arrow. And suspension. That's all I have. When I was teaching in Yuba City at Riverbend, I had a principal who loved John Wooden. He had us reading all of his different books on leadership, and so I included one that spoke to me, and thank you for the time. That's all.
Thank you, Ms. Strickland. Any? Are there any questions or comments from board members?
Well, I can tell you, you do a good job at Browns Valley. We used to share the same job at Yuba Gardens, me long before you. And it's a very hard job when you hold people accountable. That's being a vice principal is a very tough job because people don't want to be held accountable. And you did a good job. The community misses you out there. They appreciate who they have there now. They're doing a great job. But you did a good job, and you got a positive attitude. You had a positive attitude when there. And a positive attitude makes a difference with the schools that you're there. And they're two very good schools, and I'm proud of you there. Good job.
Yes, I would just like to say thank you also, Ms. Strickland, for all that you do for our kids at both of those sites. So thank you. Next, we have the comments from board members. Ms. Scott?
Hello to everyone there in the audience. I would like to say that I had the opportunity to go to Edgewater School to be participate in their spelling bee. I'd like to congratulate all the students from all of the schools because they've worked very, very hard for their accomplishment. And Thursday they will be doing their final, and I would like to wish them all the very best as well. Thank you.
Mr. Davis.
Yeah, I attended the safety meeting that was held this month and was impressed with the organization and the leadership that Jolie's showing in bringing a bunch of people together to improve the overall security on our campuses. It's a challenging subject. It's not a one-size-fits-all. But I was impressed with the community that's coming together, the sheriff, the Marysville, a police department, coming together to help to formulate good practices on our campuses. And so I was just impressed and was thankful that I had the opportunity to attend that.
Mr. Boom? Mr. Fleury?
A couple weeks ago, we attended at AXA dinner for administrators, and we had one of our administrators that won, David Jones. The one that impressed me about the AXA dinner, two districts there, Live Oak Unified had five people that won, and we had, it was amazing, the camaraderie you saw. They were there to support the staff from the janitor on up to the superintendent, and the enthusiasm for that district was something that I just enjoyed seeing. Also, the other one that was there, Twin Rivers, had two people, and to see the enthusiasm for that district, it was amazing between those. And we have several in our district that are good administrators, and it was sad that we only had one that got nominated this year. Also, I was at the Spelling Bee at Edgewater, and I was impressed with Susan, of course, was the judge, and Wendell Anderson is going to be the judge on Thursday night. But the behavior of the kids, and I've been out to Edgewater several times because I have a granddaughter there, adopted granddaughter, and the school is so calm out there. And even they brought the upper grades kids to watch the spelling bee. They came into that with work. They had a whiteboard. They were writing the spelling bee. And to watch the attitude was very good. And I've been to Edgewater, as I say, several times. The calmness on that campus is amazing. And they do a great job at Edgewater. And then the last, the Yuba Gardens Warrior Pride Dinner. We went to that. Yuba Gardens put it on 7 years. And it is amazing. For those who have never been there, the camaraderie with that staff, the leadership from that staff was amazing. The community enjoyed it. The bus drivers came. They had a group. The county office came. They had a group. And that's amazing when you bring the community and staff together, and I really enjoyed that. And that's what I look in the future for our district, that we are going more toward, that we can bring everyone together. Thank you.
Mr. Crawford.
Yes, I was fortunate enough this weekend to witness something I really didn't think I was going to see again after I retired from teaching 10 years ago now, after 36 years, and I decided to join the school board, or rather run for it, and I believe it was my second term. ROTC was eliminated. And I just really was dismayed, because I remember my days at Lyndhurst and also in Marysville High, how not only was it well received, but how many kids in both communities participated in it. So in talking to Mr. Fleury yesterday, I told him about how great it was to be at the Buckeye Parade and see almost 100 strong from both schools marching in unison in full uniform, and talking to the parents, not only from Lyndhurst, but Marysville, and how happy they were. And I just want to thank Mr. Fleury, if it wasn't for his tenacious request when every time we would present, let's get ROTC back, we would hear the nuts, too costly, and then we'd hear no, the Air Force won't permit that, but we kept pushing it up to the top of our request as board members, And then yesterday, Mr. Fleury, we've seen a fruition of your efforts, sir, and I want to thank you. And ROTC is not only alive and well, it is really, really thriving. That's all. Thank you.
Actually, I'd like to give just a couple of shout-outs. One would be to Lenny Tate and her department for the update or our revision of our English Learner Master Plan. I mean, that's a fabulous document that you and your staff put together, Lenny, so thank you very much. And the second shout-out I'd like to give is actually to our community. You're going to see in tonight's board packet, community members have actually come together and donated over $6,600 worth of merchandise to help our homeless population. So, again, thank you for our community members, or to our community members. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association. Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees, Supervisory Units. Next, we have the public comments. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card before the start of the meeting and give it to the secretary, board president, or the superintendent. The public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard during the specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. The Ralph M. Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code Section 54954.2.A states no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of a legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by person exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. Mouthful. So we do have a number of public comment cards, and from the public from our last meeting, I would really like to thank all the folks that spoke last time, and we're very mindful with regards to our time of 3 minutes per individual. We do have two comment cards that were held over from last meeting, so those are actually going to be the first two cards that we're going to start with. Dr. Starkey and I were kind of looking at it. If we're allowing 3 minutes per speaker and we have 20 minutes total time, we did the math. She had to help me, but that's about seven cards that we're going to get, or seven people that we're going to get to listen to. Pardon?
There's two schools. Two's different. The same topic.
Right, two separate topics, yes. So when we, and again, it looks like for one of the sites, we do have more cards than it looks as though we're going to have time. So we again, would hold those cards over to be first on the next agenda when we meet. Again, really, really thankful for being mindful with regards to our 3 minutes. At the end of the 3 minutes, I will ask that you stop talking, and we're actually going to turn the microphone off at that particular time, and then we would move on to our next speaker. Just want to make sure we get all the ground rules out to begin with. And then again, at the end of the 20 minutes, that public comment for each item would be finished. Okay, so our first speaker tonight is Elizabeth Williams. When you come to the microphone, would you please state your name? Looks like Elizabeth is not here. And I'm going to apologize already for this last name. Lamberto is Lamberto. No Lamberto. So our next comment card is Brooklyn Basinger. Brooklyn?
name is Brooklyn, and I have been at Oliver's Elementary School since preschool. And I'm here to talk about why Richard Sullivan should be fired. First of all, he is a liar. He says straight to my face he did not know where my teacher is. But when I got home, he called and said exactly what had happened. He knew, but instead of saying it to me, he lied. He is untrustworthy and rude. I cannot call him my principal. He has lied many of times. On my sweatshirt, it says, "Where children come first." But that's not true, because if we came first, you would get rid of him. I have loved every teacher I got, but because of him, some have left. He has only been there for 2 years. People that have been there a lot longer are leaving because of him. I will not call him my principal, and I stand here and say I will not. Because that's not how a principal acts. You are not there. You do not know what happens. I am there, and I see what happens. For example, there was a fight outside, but instead of doing something, he just stood there. A parent had to come in and do something. He did not apologize and say, "I'm sorry." He stood there and said, "Gate opens at 7:35. In fifth grade, our AC did not work. We had to sit in a hot classroom, and we asked for a fan. It took a week, and my mom had to say something until we got a fan. So this is why I think Sullivan should be fired. I have made my case clear, and if you actually care about what the students think, you will get rid of him. You will actually show that you care. But you should have done something a long time ago. I believe you will make the correct decision. I trust in you, and I trust that you will do what's right for me and all my fellow egos. Thank you for hearing me out, and don't be a lunatic. Get rid of Sullivan. This is my school, and I'm not letting it go down without a fight. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next public comment card is Kayleen Basinger.
Hello, my name is Kayleen Basinger. I attended Oliver School as a child, then became part of the school in 2008 when my son started preschool. During the duration of 11 years, I couldn't ask for a better school. It wasn't perfect, but we all loved it. My children have had the best teachers that one can ask for. However, these last 2 years under Mr. Sullivan hasn't been good. He is a bully to staff and parents. Once you don't agree with him or point out what he is doing that jeopardizes our school and children, he then turns on you like a pit bull. After the back-to-school night parents meeting, I waited till the room was cleared. I approached him about concerns of what he is doing to our school. He stretched his arm out, putting his hand in my face, and walked off. My daughter was present. How unprofessional is this man? I also don't appreciate being blocked from the Oliver School Facebook site. There was a discussion about supporting our school. I've always been a parent involved with my children. However, I spoke on the site why I will no longer support the school or attend meetings with Sullivan as our principal. I didn't speak what he wanted to hear, so he blocked me. How many wonderful and respected teachers are we going to keep losing? How many more are afraid to speak because of fear of being his target? How many children will suffer because of his actions? In closing, I agree with the words of Mr. Nematic. Oliver School is sinking. I feel the board's decision to terminate Sullivan is needed to keep Oliver School above water. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Susan Franklin.
Hello, my name is Susan Franklin, and I've been teaching at Olivehurst Elementary for 9 years, and I've been with the district for 10. First off, I'd like to thank Dr. Starkey, Mr. Carrion on the board for allowing us all to come and speak to you. I am not here speaking just for myself, but also for more than 14 employees who in the past year and a half have lost their jobs at Olivehurst, either by non-reelect, firing, have transferred, quit, or retired early. And I'm also speaking on behalf of the many certified and classified staff members who have asked me to represent them because they are too afraid to speak or even show up here because of retribution they would face. As I speak, some are still being harassed today. I have seen firsthand the way he treats the teachers he doesn't like. I have seen him corner them, either put them down, or act very coldly and cruelly to them. He's assigned blame to them on situations without any regard to the facts, and this has taken a real toll on our school. A great principal would never come in on the first year and start pitting teachers against teachers. A great principal would be fair and consistent with the whole staff, knowing that they would take away their credibility very fast if they would handle situations differently. But Mr. Sullivan came in with a lot of different ideas. He treated staff so differently on many situations. Those in favor could get away with breaking the rules all year long, while other staff members that he didn't care for, he'd write them up, they'd receive nasty emails, and he would harass them at every corner. These actions made for a toxic environment. Since Friday, March 1st, our school fell into a deep divide. Unfortunately, some staff members have brought their classroom students into the mix, and now some of our teachers are being asked by those students why they don't want Mr. Sullivan to return. Others are taking to social media and using our school sidewalk this past week trying to drum up parents to get board members to change their mind. And he is behind the scenes watching all of this and letting it happen. In my opinion, this just doesn't follow the example of unity of our school, especially using these young students this way. I believe the vote the board took didn't come lightly over a few complaints made by staff and parents. It was surely numerous infractions leveled against him over the past year and a half, with, I assume, he was given warnings and chances to change or consequences would occur. But some of our staff think that one of us has a personal connection with the board member, and that's why this all happened. And that statement is so untrue. The decision was made for a non-reelect, and I support it 100%.
Thank you, Ms. Franklin. That's your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Karen McNay.
My name is Karen McNay. I am the former sixth grade teacher at Olivehurst. I was the only credentialed sixth grade teacher when the school year started, and I needed to leave. I requested a transfer when Mr. Sullivan's harassment of me continued from last year. I want to thank you all for your time and service to our community. And all I want to say is I 100% approve of your decision to follow the administration's advice and recommendation to non-reelect Mr. Sullivan. And if any of you would like to speak to me individually, I will give you more details and evidence of why I feel this way. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Mr. Dan Pingle.
Good evening, Dr. Starkey, board members, Mr. Carrion and Mr. Hodson, which I do not know so well, but I have been introduced to you. Olivehurst School has always been and always had a very dedicated staff. This is without debate. Presently, we are divided. I stand for what we call the silent majority. You did not and will not see us posting our beliefs on School Dojo. You did not and will not see us standing in front of the school handing out flyers for a cause that we believe in, creating division and discord among parents and students. We did not, and I do not believe this is a location to hang out dirty laundry, but we do stand. We stand on your decision of non-reelection. Each staff member, each parent here has their own reasons for supporting or not supporting your decision, and I have mine. But only you, the board members, know the reasons you used to make your decisions, and I know it was not an easy one. No sixth grade teachers at our school, only long-term subs, only one teacher left in the learning center, at least 10 staff members gone that I taught beside for many years. No, I'm okay. I got it. 17 Olivehurst campus employees chose to send administration evaluations to the district to avoid reprisals. I could go on. Something is wrong here. I could go on, but I will not. Yet, I still do not believe this is a time and place to hang out dirty laundry. I think not. But I do know this, that this too shall pass. Now is a time for healing. Send us an administrator with integrity and full of compassion. May God bless each one of you up here and the board members. I know you have to make hard decisions. I ask that the good Lord would bless everyone at Oliver School, including our administrators. I ask that every parent, every student that walks on that campus would be blessed. May the whole Oliver community be blessed. And may God bless America.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Garciela Zambrano.
Sounds better. Okay, I want to apologize that I can't read my own letter. I left my glasses at home, so I'm putting Miss Jenny on the spot for me. So she's going to read it.
Very good, that's fine.
After our last meeting, we got together with the ELAC group, and they've asked
me to. Could you move up to the microphone?
The ELAC group asked me to write a letter. And so we discussed it, and we wrote it, and I have 28 signatures that are attached to it. So Miss Jenny's going to read it. And again, it's our letter. It's not hers. She's just reading
Thank
it
you.
For me. Okay. Good evening. MJUSD Board of Trustees, you all know Marysville Joint Unified School District mission, vision, and value statements. Thank you for overseeing and upholding these statements. We, the parents of Oliver School, want to fully support you in upholding MJUSD's mission, vision, and value statements. In order to do this, you need to know that MJUSD statements are not being fully met. The mission states, partnership with our staff, students, and their families, and the community will provide each student with the most appropriate educational opportunities in a safe environment. Parents say, to accomplish this, Oliver School must have stability in its leadership. We, the ELAC parents, can assure you that Mr. Sullivan has established a solid foundation of support and stability to our Oliver School community. The vision. How can you create partnership when you keep getting rid of principals? Upon what a small group of unhappy staff report to the district seems reactive instead of proactive. The practice of getting rid of principals in this manner at Oliver has to stop immediately. It is unfair to the students, parents, and community, and unjust to the principals that have gone through the revolving door at Oliver School. Fiscal accountability. Yes, the school is fiscally accountable, but as active parents in Oliver School communities, it is very disappointing and frustrating when you get rid of and not renew the employee contracts to good supportive principals that bring great ideas and good skill leadership. Again, the district gets rid of principals for the same reason as mentioned above. Diversity. We build strength through diversity. How is a receptive environment going to be created when we lack leadership stability for our students at Oliver School? Respect. We treat all students, their families, and all staff members with fairness, respect, and understanding. Where is the fairness? Where is the respect? Where is the understanding? 3 years ago, you got rid of Principal Leticia Castaneda within 6 months of her arrival at Oliver School. She had great plans, and she was not given a chance to work with us because you paid more attention to a group of unhappy staff unwilling to work with her for the benefit of students, parents, and community. Now you are doing the same thing with Mr. Sullivan. By empowering that small, unhappy group, you give off the perception of listening only to them on issues that may or already have arrived that involves them, without consideration to other staff members, students, and their families. Social responsibility.
Thank you very much. If you would like to submit the letter maybe to Mr. Carrion, they could make copies. And. Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you. So our next speaker is Ed Neumannick.
Yes, last time I spoke, I went over my 3 minutes. I apologize, but I was rather upset that you didn't publish my letter of resignation, which said that it was time to abandon ship at Oliver. And I think what's happened at the school is verification of that. And if you recall, one of the posters I made said, was the three monkeys, see no evil, speak no evil, hear no evil, which I considered the district was doing in terms of Mr. Sullivan's case. So I have to applaud you, Mr. Carrion, for finally seeing the light, and Mrs. Starkey. And I appreciate your service. I understand you're retiring, too. Freedom's good. Congratulations. And Mr. Carrion, I think there may be some hope for you yet. Board members, Mr. Boom and Mr. Crawford, thank you for listening to me. The last time I talked, you were the only two that stayed for the duration, which went over 3 minutes. So I wanted to say Mr. Sullivan is a master manipulator. And these people that are saying that somehow he is this fine person, they have not experienced his manipulation. His manipulation goes to the point that the infrastructure, anything becomes a tool to target them. Your emails become a barrage of daily harassments. There's no such thing as support. If you're on his target list, you ask him for support, you get none. You say it's your fault. He blames you. Mr. Sullivan does not know how to be accountable for his own actions. And I think you must have seen that, and that's the reason that you have, in effect, fired him. And I applaud you for that. And I think that you should stand by that decision. And based on the divisive nature of Mr. Sullivan, what you're seeing, and what you're seeing here, this is his doing. His announcement, this is leaving. He is manipulating these people, these poor people who thinks he's such a charming man. He is not a charming man. He is a monster. And like a monster in the movies, the monster will not die. The monster needs to die. He needs to be gone. You need to get rid of him. You need to stand by your decision. And his people that support him, you're standing by him thinking he's got your back. He doesn't have your back. What he's got for your back is a knife in your back like he did to our two-year probationary teachers who are seasoned veterans. Mr. Pinkle is running special ed by himself because last year you got rid of a special ed teacher that you let him non-reelect who had a glowing resume, actually ran a school herself and could run that whole department. He got rid of her and you let it happen. Got rid of another teacher, the sixth grade Mrs. McNay's partner. He may be collateral damage, trying to isolate her. He did nothing wrong, but maybe being in the wrong place at the wrong time, trying to come back to the district where he was raised. So I urge you, if anything, to evict him from his office, to take him, to make him leave immediately, because he is the divisive force to the school, to this district, and the best thing you can do is give him his walking papers and do not let him spend another day.
Thank you, Mr. Pneumatic. So that was actually our seven cards there. On the last card that would be able to be carried over to the last meeting, it looks as though there's five people on the one card. What I would ask from you is to each fill out your separate card so you can have, unless these five people were anticipating one spokesperson, but we do need to have one name per card in order to have that. So if you were one of the five that filled out the card, if you would like to fill out a separate card individually and then hand it in, then you would be up first for the next board meeting. But that does end our 20 minutes for that particular topic item. Discussing our next topic item, first is Jeffrey Alber.
I'm just going to pull a chair real quick so I can kneel on it. I've got some medical issues that I'm dealing with. My name is Jeff Alberg. I'm the Marysville Unified Teachers Association representative for Johnson Park Elementary. And I've been asked to give you a message from a number of teachers. If you're interested in knowing what is happening at the school that is causing the division amongst our staff, we're asking that you meet individually with teachers or in a small group to find out what these concerns are all about. We recognize that there is a group of teachers that is supportive of the status quo. However, most of these teachers don't realize what's happening to the other teachers at the school site. Teachers who are fearful are not going to speak up in a group setting. I'm sure you can understand that. The Marysville Unified Teachers Association will be willing to help set up meetings at another location for you to meet with the teachers who have these concerns. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next speaker is Juwan Gog. Excuse me. So we are only going to have 3 minutes with all this supporting background, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening, board members. My name is Jeevan Gag. I am the fourth grade teacher. This is my 13th year teaching, fourth year at Johnson Park. My colleagues and I are here on our own volition to share with you why we believe Mr. Kovach should remain principal at our school, Johnson Park Elementary. We respect your time and the time of others in attendance tonight, so we have chosen once again to make a collaborative, collective statement on behalf of all of us who support Mr. Kovach. We as teachers at Johnson Park Elementary have witnessed a significant connection between Mr. Kovach's leadership and our students' success. Student and teacher success stem from strong, consistent leadership. Some of the changes Mr. Kovach brought to Johnson Park Elementary include our school-wide morning meetings on the blacktop for the flag salute and announcements. He brought PBIS to the forefront of our school community and is working every day to build strong relationships with students, staff, and parents. He has added parent and community involvement nights that create opportunities for staff, students, and parents to interact and form positive connections that support academic success. Mr. Kovach has implemented strong programs at Johnson Park to build a solid foundation of positivity, community, and a love for learning. With his leadership, we started our daily intervention time, which has already garnered positive student achievement and academic growth across all grade levels. This journey began at our PLC conference last summer when Mr. Kovach ended each day's session with a collaborative meeting. We routinely spent over an hour to debrief each other on what each of us had learned in our individual breakout sessions. We would then brainstorm ways to best put PLCs into practice. While most of us were tired and ready to call it a day, we were encouraged by Mr. Kovach to talk out what we had learned since that it was fresh on our minds. Mr. Kovach helped us identify our weaknesses to determine our areas of need and provide us with the resources to be successful once we return to school. His encouragement is the reason we started so strong and didn't waste any time at the beginning of the school year. Our daily intervention plan was fully implemented by the second week of school. Once school began, our collaborative PLC teams continued to meet to reevaluate, reflect, and identify ongoing needs. Mr. Kovach is quick to provide us with all the resources that we need and to discuss our planning and monitor progress. He gave us more paraprofessionals so that our group of students who required more support could be smaller. He also brought back the Lexia program for us at our...
Thank you very much. Next, we have Jesus Rivas.
Yes, my name is Jesus Rivas, and I am a sixth grade teacher at Johnson Park. I've been there for 13 years. Mr. Kovach is always looking for innovative and proactive ways to support our students' academic growth. A number of our students struggle with basic phonics and phonological awareness. Our paraprofessionals rotate small groups during non-core time to help these students improve these skills with a program called SIPS. Our paras were working well with this program, but they felt they could better support our students if they received formal training on the SIPS program. At their request, Mr. Kovach immediately brought this matter to our school site council and looked into training for our para educators and teachers who wanted to attend. Yesterday at our teacher work day, all those paras were provided with that training and are excited to take their new understanding back to their small groups to teach. When faced with the task, Mr. Kovach shows action. He does what he says he will do, always with the best interest of our students in mind. Through his continued support and positivity, the past 2 years have improved the relationship that our school has developed with the community that we serve. Many of our students face challenging home lives and crave a personal connection. Mr. Kovach has given them that connection. He has supported teachers in making those connections as well. Whether it's spending his lunch to play football with the sixth grade students on a Friday afternoon, teaching students the importance of honoring our veterans each year, or entering our school in the Oliver's Christmas Parade for the first time, Mr. Kovach shows our students that they are the ones that matter most. Mr. Kovach is making a difference in the lives of these students, and we know this because our students come and tell us how excited they were to see him at these events. Their faces light up when they see someone they respect taking a genuine interest in their lives. Through actions such as these, Mr. Kovach truly shows that he is accessible to all students and staff and is working each and every day to make a difference in their lives. We as educators teach our students to speak up when they see something they feel is not right. So we felt the need to stand before you and practice what we preach. We understand and respect that the board members have procedures they must follow, and because of that, this will be the last time we will address the board regarding this topic. Our support for Mr. Kovach does not and will not waver. However, we will accept and respect the decision made by the board, and we will continue to maintain a professional and positive learning environment for our students at Johnson Park Elementary. Thank you for your time and for your consideration of our comments tonight.
Thank you. And I would just again like to thank all the audience for being very respectful to our process of our public comments. So thank you very much. Next, we have the superintendent's report.
I just wanted to take this opportunity to welcome our three new administrative representatives. We have Brian Williams, our Director of Technology. You met Heather Strickland a bit ago when she gave a report on Cordova and Browns Valley. And Lenny Tate is our Executive Director of Ed Services. So welcome, and I'll see you next week at Cabinet. Cabinet was canceled today. They were heartbroken. I got to go wait and see if I was going to be selected for jury duty. And so by 3:15, I was back at work, so they didn't pick me. One of the teams I didn't want to be on, so thank you.
Next, we have the approval of minutes. Actually, we're going to approve both of the minutes from the regular board meeting on February 26, 2019, and then the special board meeting on March 4, 2019. If there's no additions or deletions, we will entertain a motion. Motion to approve by Mr. Davis. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Seven yes. Next we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that a board member would like to have pulled? If not, is there a motion?
Make a motion to approve the consent agenda as
motion by Mr. Crawford to approve. Is there a second?
Second
by Mr. Allison. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Seven yes. Moving on to new business. New business, number one, 2018-19, second interim financial report. Mr. Hodson?
I lost my crowd. I thought they were here for me. And
we didn't call them back.
So members of the board, superintendent and colleagues, thank you for having me. I'm here to talk a little bit about the second interim report and give that report to you. We used to talk about putting the bottom line up front in any brief, and so what we're going to ask for today is for, at the end of this brief, for the board to approve a positive certification. And that simply says that the district will make its financial obligations for this year and the next two. And as I will show you, that is really not a very controversial Before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about all of our funds because we have a tendency to focus exclusively on the general fund, and it's worth maybe looking a little bit broader. We, of course, have the general fund, and you can see there we have a substantial balance there in our savings, if you will. So we're comfortable there and looking good certainly for the next couple of years. We have, you'll see a change there in special reserves. That is Fund 17. We've added about $1.9 million this year and expect to in the next couple. And that's our plan, as we talked earlier, to start pre-funding those COPs. And you'll see where that sort of boogeyman comes a little closer to us here in the out-year projection. So we're starting to put money away into there. The building fund has jumped by $12.5 million. That's the Measure P receipts that we let earlier this year. And we most likely will use that towards the Arboga project that we have spoken about. And then the capital facilities, that's also known as your developer fees, and that is being used to provide those four additional classrooms at Edgewater for the growth that we've received in the area. So there's those. Now let's take a minute and speak about the general fund and its changes. I'm going to focus you on the second interim report itself, our projections for the rest of the year as of the data through the end of January. And then you can see the variance column will show you any difference from the first interim report. You'll see a bunch of additional revenue. The biggest single chunk of that was $700,000 of a prior year adjustment. So last year we got some additional money that hits this year. There's also $320,000 in the restricted side for the low performing student grant. When you get down to the expenses, a lot of shifting really between one category and another, but the single one I'll draw your attention to is the capital outlay, and that is for the Ag Mechanics, South Auditorium, and Culinary projects that we have initiated since the first interim report. All of that activity, the transfers out, that's that $1.9 million that's going towards Fund 17. The change you'll see is the additional $930,000 to get to $1.9, and that's what used to be OPEB, and we were able, as I think I mentioned to you at a prior meeting, that we had money that was in a clearing account that allows us to pay our OPEB from that, and consequently, rather than sort of have that windfall, we have it. Let's put that towards Fund 17, too, and keep our budget basically static, if you will. And that way, when we have to, in 3 years, when that's gone, we can just resume paying without having to all of a sudden have a bill that we weren't in the habit of paying. And all of that, all the ups and downs and what have you, you can see the net increase-decrease is essentially decimal dust from where it was at first interim. So we're essentially in the same position that we were. Now, I'll take a minute and talk about the out-year projections. Remember, as we started the presentation, it's the current year plus two, and I've added that little dividing line there because we've added the next 2 years to give a five-year outlook. You don't have to, and, of course, the farther we go into the future, the less and less clear our crystal ball is, but I think it's instructive to take a look at that in the future. So you see that we're essentially in equilibrium. We have a steady fund balance for the next couple of years without any real fear that we're not going to be able to meet our financial obligations. The one thing I would draw your attention to, though, is a little caveat here, is that we, for whatever reason, we have a habit of we negotiate in arrears, and our single biggest expense, as with any school district, is salaries. And so when we start to make salary adjustments, not only for this year, but for the next couple years, that will dramatically impact that. So while we are currently have a little bit of a surplus, our cost of 1% is about $800,000. So if you were to, I like easy numbers, 2.5% is 2 million. You can see that if we did 2.5 per year each year, that by that third year out, you would have about a $5 million deficit. Not saying we wouldn't. That's just before we get excited about seeing a positive number, recognize that could change very quickly. That's it. And then the other thing I would highlight is when you get to those out years, you notice that in that 21-22 is the last year at which we're still programming $2 million over to Fund 17. We stopped that in that fifth year. And if you look at the little orange block there higher than the other two, that is the impact of the first of those COPs. So when I talked about that bogey getting closer, we're going to start paying that $2.4 million a year in that year. So it seemed like it was a theoretical threat, and now it's a much more present threat. So economic projections, of course, these are only as good as the data and the economy support. UCLA has downgraded their forecast to a 3-2-1 scenario. In other words, 3% for last year, 2% growth expected in the year we are currently in, and then 1% in the year out of that. That's interesting in that the budget is currently built on COLAs of 3.46 and 2.86% respectively. And, of course, with 1% growth, you're not going to get a 2.86% COLA. So revenues might end up going down. But then again, I, amongst many others, have said for the last 4 years, boy, this can't keep going on, and it has. So, none of us are very good at reading the tea leaves. You can see from the other charts what's happened to GDP. And interestingly, in the 2018, we had the stimulus from the tax cuts, and it looks to be that's waning a little bit, and the impact of that is dropping off. One way in which we see that, it's a little too early to tell definitively. For the first time in about 4 years that I'm aware of, the state revenues are actually $1.3 billion below what the enacted budget was. And Governor Brown, if he had a number of things he was known for, one of which was he always underestimated those future revenues and then had additional revenues at the end of the year, that this year we are below revenues. That may change. Some of it may be a matter of just when people are filing because of the impact of the tax changes that were enacted a year ago. So it's hard to say, but currently, as of February, it was $1.3 billion below. A couple of slides from school services that I think are useful to think about. One is that during the period in which LCFF was being implemented, we as a high unduplicated count district were received a windfall, right? Compared to our component or counterpart districts, we received more money in each given year than they did. And now that we're fully implemented, those cost of living increases that we'll get going forward are going to be shared the same by us as other districts. So it's a little bit of a paradigm shift for us. The second thing is, and we would talk every year for the last 4 years about this one-time money. We say, well, don't plan on it. It's one-time money. But if you get one-time money 4 years in a row, it starts to kind of feel like it's ongoing money, and it's just a natural habit. And if you were to add that all up, it's about $9.7 million we've received over the past 4 years in one-time money. And that, as you can see from that last slide there, that is that will not be repeated this year, so we're going to get zero for one-time grants, and we don't expect it to come. So it's a little bit of a belt-tightening there, too. I thought this slide was important because I was contacted by the paper and they said, boy, aren't you excited that the governor has proposed cutting, reducing your STRS rates? Well, not really, because it's not really a cut, right? It's less of an increase, and that's good. But I did the quick math. That's about $386,000 we'll pay more this year than last year by that 0.82% increase. Now, it's better than the 1.85, but it is still not a cut by any means. It is just less of an increase. Of course, the same thing is true on the STRS side. I'm sorry, the PERS side. That's about, if you were to go back from when the rates started to be increased, we pay about $3.8 million more every year for STRS and about $1.9 million every year for PERS than we did back then. So it feels like it's great. We get a lot of money, and shoot, they come and take a lot of it away. It's about 5.7 in increased employer contributions from a handful of years ago. Not surprisingly, this is in just the last couple of weeks. I get a news feed every day, and I just grabbed a whole bunch of the headlines of districts up and down the state. And I'm going to say something a little bit controversial here, and I'm going to tell you, I think that's actually kind of good news, right? Our district is in good financial stead right now. This is just a smattering of the many, many districts that are struggling up and down the state. That is good news, ironically, in that I think it's going to force the legislature to do something a little bit different. And what you see, CSBA is currently monitoring 385 different legislative proposals that are being discussed right now. Some of them are going to be burdens to us. Some of them involve more supervision and various other regulatory increases, but a lot of them involve additional funding too. And so my hope is that with all this, the districts that are struggling, there will be more revenue and potentially when we come back for the budget discussion here in just a few months, I'll have good news for you then. We'll do our May revision, and then, of course, the enacted budget will come in likely in early June. One thing that'll be a little different this year and be interesting to watch is the sort of atmosphere has changed, right? Governor Brown could pretty much do whatever he wanted, and the legislature, by and large, followed suit. You now have, of course, a new governor, and we don't know how he's going to be, and you have the legislature with a supermajority that no longer needs to necessarily cooperate against the aisle and can force through whatever they want. So it'll be very interesting to see how the May revision comes out, and then from that, do we get that same in the enacted budget? So that'll be an interesting process. And so with that, as I mentioned on my first slide, I think with a high degree of confidence, we can ask for the board to approve this with a positive certification. We look good for the next year and the next two, certainly. There are hazards that lay there, and it's worthwhile to continue to be frugal and very judicious in our spending, and as we have been. As I said, you can do the second interim, and we'll look forward to what happens during the next few months. And with that, any questions?
Any questions or comments from the board members?
Well presented. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hodson. With that, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion by Mr. Crawford to approve. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Scott. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Motion carries, 7 yes. Next, we have Board of Trustees, the superintendent selection process. So as we kind of talked about it a little bit last time, and Mr. Carrion gave us some information, there's three procedures that we could take a look at. One would be the appointment. One is a limited search, and second is a national or statewide search, I think is maybe what we called that. With regards to the limited search, if I remember it right, we would look to see somebody and maybe hire somebody locally to help run our search, and that search would not only be within house, it would be in our neighboring counties. Is that accurate, Mr. Carrion?
Well, theoretically, that's accurate. As I alluded to before, it will invite other candidates, which is not necessarily a bad thing. You can't really limit the scope, because once the posting is out and the word is out, I'm sure it'll generate interest.
Okay, thank you. And then the national or statewide search is where last board meeting, Mr. Carrion gave us some information by companies that we could hire, and they would go through a process. I think the range, if I remember right, was maybe from 18,000 to 30,000 that we were looking at to be able to hire a firm to help us through that process, and it would widen that search greatly. And then the third one would be back to the appointment state. And Dr. Starkey talked to me earlier today. So the appointment would be each board member would come to a closed session meeting and be able to discuss their particular candidate that they would like to have for that appointment. And then we would come back out into the open session and we would do a vote on each of those candidates then, Dr. Starkey, and if all seven of them move forward to that process. And it would be my assumption that whoever got the majority vote then would be the superintendent. Does that sound accurate, Mr. Carrion?
That is accurate. And typically that whole process happens in closed session and then a reporting out in open session.
So even the vote would be in closed session?
Correct.
Okay. And it seems to me the cost of that is pretty much zero. So it seems in light of maybe, or is there any other discussion from board members?
Yeah, I have a question. At if you look at an appointment, at what point do you ask that person if they even want to be appointed? I mean, each person could, I mean, you might come up with 3, 4, 5 names, and I mean, at what point in that process do you ask that person? I mean, when does that person come into the room to be in the discussion?
Any guidance?
I think ultimately it really comes down to the determination as to whether or not through that closed session conversation, the board collectively, not necessarily majority speaking, but at least collectively, wants to consider in-house candidates. So, and then vet out those potential in-house candidates through that collective discussion. Again, it's not necessarily a discussion that says somebody is already majoritively favored. At least that discussion is generated through a collective interest in discussing potentially in-house candidates, if that makes any sense.
Now, with the, with the open house, or what you're saying is for these candidates, you would open in-house like you would for any job, and then if we first I couldn't come in and say so-and-so would do a great job without knowing if they really have an interest in doing it. So are you saying then we open it up district-wide, or?
It could start that way, And then if there's a majority to encourage or go out and encourage that candidate and seek that candidate's interest, then the ensuing conversation would be to bring that person in. If there is a majority interest based on your suggestion, which is a viable suggestion, and then as Mr. Boom indicated, if there's a majority leaning towards that candidate, then you could conceivably bring that person in and develop that conversation even more.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Allison.
If we don't, I mean, there's only like 3 or 4 months that we have to pick somebody. If we don't come to someone, how do we select an interim person to take Gabe's place until we actually pick somebody?
Ultimately, time is of the essence. It's that time of year, and there is an elongated process through a search, but there's also a benefit to that, of course. The downside is the competing timelines against other districts that are also seeking candidates.
I
would just add that it's a doable timeline. So I don't think you're going to find June 30th you don't have a candidate.
Mr. Fleury, do you have a comment?
So you're saying originally you want to start to see if there's somebody in-house before we cast the net out wider?
Well, no, actually, I think we're just trying to figure out to make sure we understand what all three of the items are. And again, and correct me if I'm probably wrong, Mr. Carrion, but I would foresee potentially there could be 7 candidates that maybe the board would want to be a point. Each one of us could have a candidate maybe for doing that. And I would think when we talk about in-house or out-of-house, I don't think it has to be, does it have to be in-house or could it be out-of-house?
Well, out-house is an interesting subject in and of itself, as opposed to the doghouse.
We don't want an out-house.
But ultimately, if you're going to have an appointment discussion, yes, we're referring to in-house candidates. You couldn't logistically and from a pure employment standpoint appoint somebody out of district without having a posting and playing out the full vetting process. It wouldn't be prudent.
I guess what I'm trying to figure out is the timeline that we're talking about. If we're looking at any kind of a search, it's at least 30 days, business days, which is about 6 weeks. And then you have some sort of a group that has submitted, and that probably is another month. So if, you know, reading these proposals, they work that in. You set the end date. Do you want this person here by July? Do you want them here by August? What is your end date? And in the meantime, you would probably have to have some interim person who would be monitoring and or conducting the business of the district until you have a permanent appointment. And so, you know, to me, it's a two-phase step. Now, it could be that this interim turns out to be a good candidate, and you turn around and you hire them. But to me, to start things, we need to select which one of these proposals that we have we want to go with, and then have the discussion about when you want to have the person in place, which right now I'm saying the earliest would be August. And that's a guess, and that's what I'm saying is you have to.
This is a season for folks to be looking for jobs. The turnaround can be quite quick. The process doesn't have to be elongated. People are out there looking. They have their applications ready. They have to submit them. If we stay in-house with someone that was suggested at the last meeting, reviews them, brings them together, the board interviews them. If you like them, you're golden. You pick one you like. Or if you go with a bigger search, that company will do it. But it is a doable timeline. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about not having enough time to do it. But you need to pick one, which is why it's on the agenda tonight.
Yeah, I think Dr. Starkey has given us a good time frame in announcing her retirement. We'll miss her, but she's given us enough time, I think, to find someone to permanently fill the spot, even if we open up locally and in-house simultaneously. Why couldn't we do that? I still think we have enough time to find the applicant and then proceed with the interviews and who we like.
So I would just like to make a comment. When you had made a comment, Dr. Starkey, about someone from the last board meeting, I don't remember a discussion us having with someone within house that we were going to have a discussion about.
You had no, not someone in house, talking about someone who would do the search.
Right.
For example, Rick Teagarden's name was mentioned.
Right.
That's what I was talking about.
Yeah. So even if we're thinking about the appointment state, what if we had former employees that would be interested? Would that be something that an appointment could be from a former employee?
That wouldn't necessarily be an appointment situation. It would be an open call and a posting.
So was that yes or no?
No.
No. Thank you. Any other comments?
Just one quick question. Other than an administrative credential, what are the requirements to be qualified for superintendent?
Well, ultimately, a search firm will ask you what qualifications, what characteristics do you want to see in your next superintendent? Oftentimes, that's the very first discussion that'll happen with any search firm or anybody guiding the search, whether it's low-scale, wide search, national search, because they want to know ultimately who you want in a superintendent. Qualifications, characteristics, all of those things, personality, all of those things that you think are needed to successfully run the district. There are districts that have superintendents, have hired superintendents that don't have an administrative credential. That's no longer a requirement. We have districts up and down the state, nationally, that have hired economists, that have hired politicians, that have hired historians, researchers. That's an administrative credential is no longer a requirement.
If I may, if you're going to have someone with credibility with the people with which they are going to lead, I would say at a bare minimum, they have to have been a teacher and an administrator.
I would concur.
We got ourselves into a bit of a fix a few years back with someone who didn't have a lot of that experience.
I will second that.
Is there any more discussion regarding that?
Yeah. Are you going?
Yeah. I just want to make sure that we do not rush this, that we go for the best candidate. I have been through every superintendent here since we unified. We've had some good ones, and we've had some not so good. And this is the most important job a board can take, is selecting a superintendent. CSBA, of which I'm a member 5 terms, have said the biggest job you will ever have as a board is to select someone. And we need to get input from the community, from the administrators, our constituents, to find out the quality they want. I've already had people talk to me about some concerns they have they would like to see for the next one. They would like better communication. There are some things, and we need to hear from our constituents before we make this. We have been put here to do the best job for the constituents of this community, and this is not something we should rush into. We should do the best job that we can.
Yeah, I feel like that we've got people that work within a district that know the district, have been in the district a long time, and that would work very well in our district. And I think that, to me, I would like to see us start at the district level and then work out from there. I just think we have people that are qualified within our district that could step up and take on these jobs.
So, Mr. Boom, are you looking at the limited search then?
I would look more at start with appointment. That would be where I would like to start, but I'm one of seven.
Would that be appointment with the idea that they want the job permanently?
Yeah, we would have to come together as a board and figure out who within the district we would look at for an appointment, and then then we would, you know, of course be in closed session, and then we'd have to bring people in, talk to them, and
sure, I would go with that.
My only thought with that would be that, again, then that's going to, as Mr. Fleury says, I think we need to look to try to make sure we get the best candidate. And I think being able to have a limited search is going to be more availability for people within the district if they would like to apply. And then they could certainly apply for the job, and then we could look at it from that standpoint. And again, the limited search is much cheaper than the other one. A little more expensive than the appointment, but I think it would give people the opportunity, if they wanted to apply, then they certainly could, instead of us having to go out and wrestle bushes to see who we could find.
I would agree with Mr. Russ.
I think, like Mr. Fleury, without aging myself too much, I've known since Charlie Center was the board member, and so that when they hired Lou Ferrari, and just as history, and I like to always reflect back on history, if you could call it luck or whatever, we've had our best success when we found someone that has taught, has been a superintendent, but more importantly, they know the area, they know the teachers, they know the people. When we brought in someone from out of state or the Bay Area, without mentioning names, Southern California, yeah, well, now you're going to mention names. We haven't had that kind of success. We have a unique community. If someone has paid their dues and moved up in the ranks, we've got to consider them. But we also have people in, you know, Wheatland and within the area that, you know, are familiar with the area, familiar with the school. I would think the minimum qualifications would be, with Dr. Starkey said, that would be teaching and management experience at a good level. I think we have them in-house. I think we have in the community. I think we have them around here.
Is there any other discussion? If not, I would like to make a motion that the board would take a look at the limited search process in order to find our next superintendent. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Allison. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? One opposed, Mr. Davis.
We have just a clarification now on just exactly what you mean by the limited. So it was
as we described it earlier. It's
okay.
Going to be open up to the N district and the neighboring community counties. But as Mr. Carrion said, somebody from Southern California could see that list or see that posting, and they could still apply. Is that an accurate statement, Mr. Carrion?
Yes.
Thank you. I didn't think so. That's why I wanted the clarification.
Okay, so Lisa, how do we do that?
I just think you have to amend your motion.
Well, the motion stays. I'm not changing
the motion. And the vote has taken place. I think that there is obviously a six person
one.
Saying, yes, it's a clear decision to move forward with the limited search. Sorry, Mr. Davis.
Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.